Welcome to hour number two of the program for Friday, January 14th, 2011 on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. It, of course, is time for the Federal News Countdown, the three most important federal news stories of the week as chosen by two experts in the world of the federal government. And my experts this week are great ones. Expert number one to my left is Derek T. Dortch, president of Diversa Group and host of Fed Access. And if you were listening in the noon hour today, heard your show today. That's great, right? One as always. And it's nice to have you in the studio.
Thank you so much, Francis. Always good to be here.
It's great to have you. And Josh Soslack is director of Clio Strategies and a senior fellow at the Telework Exchange. Josh, nice to have you. You were in New Orleans last week.
I was in New Orleans last week, and let me tell you how much more fun it is to be here.
Liar, you lie.
But it is great to be back on the show, Francis.
It's nice to have you.
People want to know what's going on in the studio in here.
Well, I will just say I'm glad there's no webcams yet.
Right.
It's probably coming, but...
the Saints lost, so, you know, it was a tough time.
It must have been...
But LSU won, so there's still some people happy.
And they kept Les Miles, so so there's not every LSU fan was crazy about that idea, but that's a whole different.
That's the sports show.
Sports talk segment the Federal News Countdown has been brought to you by. Anyway, you've each chosen three terrific stories on the countdown this week, and we'll get started right away with
number three.
Third most important federal news story of the week is chosen by Josh Soslack, is headlined, New Law Prohibits Genetic Screening for Jobs. And I have to be honest with you, when I saw this, I thought this was already the case. I didn't know this was new.
What happened was there was an implementation of a federal rule, and so the law was kind of set up, but it didn't really apply to the job screening as much. And so it's a regulatory implication or implementation that caused this. And it's really a core privacy issue. And the reason that I put it in there is because I think it's very interesting when we talk about kind of risk management for firms, and we talk about a knowledge worker economy and how, you know, when you talk about a knowledge worker economy, your real risks are the people. It's not the product. It's not the machines making the widget.
Mm-hmm.
It's the people. And when we talk about things like rising healthcare costs, group healthcare pools, and issues related to people's health and productivity, because again, with knowledge workers, those are driving the costs. The understanding someone's genetic makeup would be really interesting from a risk perspective, but it gets into a whole lot of privacy issues. I don't know if you remember the old movie Gattaca.
Yeah. Saw it on an airplane once.
Yeah. You know, there's a lot of kind of weird Big Brother things that could happen. And
sure.
So it's interesting that we're really moving forward on the privacy protection as well. So
mm-hmm.
That's, I think, a good news. But this is something to watch.
I must say your Gattaca example reminds me, in hindsight, that there were probably lessons that I could have learned, but I fell asleep during the movie.
Yeah,
nothing personal against
Netflix. You can get it.
Is there a balance here where some of this information might be reasonable for the potential employee or the current employee to allow the employer to see, or do you think there should be a firewall here?
Well, I think the way it's set up right now is there's pretty much a firewall. But as we get into issues of how we do web communication and how we do things like last week, the White House and the Secretary of Commerce had a press conference to talk about this new kind of trusted identities in cyberspace initiative. Because if you get your prescription refilled on the web, the question is, okay, is that information about why you have this prescription and what the underlying condition is available to everybody through cyberspace.
Mm-hmm.
So those privacy issues are very important. I don't know.
Yeah, and you know, Francis, I mean, I just kind of think about this, Josh, you know, that even with this whole situation with WikiLeaks, and we're kind of talking about kind of the release of information that was supposed to be secure,
mm-hmm.
now we're talking about genetic information about people's health records, and if somebody has, you know, whether it be HIV or cancer or anything like that, and employers possibly using this information to make a decision on whether you should have a job or not, or, you know, what kind of benefits you have or insurance or anything like that. I mean, I think this is going to be a really kind of tough argument. I mean, I do think, like you're saying, that this information could possibly be helpful. You know,
mm-hmm.
it reminds me of Minority Report, where people were using, you know, trying to
yeah.
and kind of figure out before somebody commits a crime,
mm-hmm.
could we stop it?
Mm-hmm.
information can be used in a certain kind of great way, but I think we got to be very, very careful. This whole WikiLeaks thing brings into a whole new dynamic of can we really secure information that is given to a number of different people that's supposed to be classified.
And as we start to use biometrics for internet security and other things, some of that information may become available through the biometric.
Josh Soslak, story number three on the Federal News Countdown is headline, New Law Prohibits Genetic Screening for Jobs. You can find it and all of our stories on the countdown at federalnewsradio.com/in-depth, all posted up for you to read and follow along with. Strat4.com is the source for Derek Dorch's story number three. The headline is simply Congressional Security and the Tucson Shooting, and this is an issue that obviously jumped into the headlines because of the shooting of Gabrielle Giffords. The good news is that she seems to be recovering nicely, and information about that available at federalnewsradio.com. But this incident, justifiably, I think, makes every public servant, not just member of Congress, wonder what's possible for me. What could I be next?
Exactly. You know, this really caught my attention because of the simple fact is that we're starting to see this kind of whole ramp up of rhetoric. And me and you, Josh, were talking about the kind of the ramp up of rhetoric. And, you know, sometimes, you know, not that we're saying that the rhetoric is causing this, but there are definitely people who are kind of taking these words and then now kind of making them into actions. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, with the whole kind of threat scenario, as we look at Capitol Police, Secret Service, a lot of people are doing a lot more behavioral analysis to kind of say, listen, I mean, you know, who are possible threats? And I think, honestly, this should be a conversation to say, well, listen, local police needs to be, you know, they need to be notified when a congressional person is speaking somewhere. We may need to have screening at an event in order to kind of make sure nobody walks in with a weapon or something like that. I don't know, maybe small tweaks can possibly prevent this from ever happening again in order to make sure all of our, you know, congressional or any kind of leader stays safe. I mean, you know, I've seen a number of different incidents, even with a school system recently. I don't know if anybody saw that, where someone walked into a school board meeting and the guy was just shooting and the people kind of
I did see that.
I mean, you know, but we've got to get a handle of these kind of situations, or we're going to run into a situation where people are not going to want to come to public events or public officials because they're afraid for their lives.
And, you know, it's interesting when you look at this issue and you say, this is domestic terrorism. This is not, you know, we've spent a lot of money on looking at foreign threats. But you think about Oklahoma City, you think about other kinds of examples of domestic terrorism, we need to put some focus on this, and I think the behavioral approach is a real smart one.
The challenge that I think is here is parsing exactly what security means. People immediately go to the gun issue and the possession of guns and so on. And I talked to a friend of mine who's a constitutional scholar. This is his job, is to study and analyze the Constitution. And he said the reality of what the Founding Fathers intended by the Second Amendment was that the populace, the militias of the time, not the militias that we think of today that have a different connotation, but the point at that time was so that we didn't have with our own government what we had at that time with the British government, which was essentially decamping their troops in our homes.
Right.
And the inability to fight back because of the fact that they had all, the government had all the guns, and the populace had no way to defend themselves if defending themselves became necessary. So the idea that, well, you can just have your hunting rifles and all of that, that seems to me to be a little contrary. And yet, you also don't want these guys. I'm also fascinated by the idea that some of my colleagues in the media continue to use the word alleged gunman.
Right.
I think enough people saw him do this
we can
dispense with the alleged part.
It was interesting to watch the president kind of walk the line in the speech and talk about the gunman without really talking about the person because of the legal issues.
Of course,
And I think, Francis, that the key thing is what we've been talking about is protective intelligence. I mean, you know, we can't take any kind of threat lightly these days. I mean, if we see somebody saying something or probably ranting and raving about something, we just don't know. I mean, you know, a person could be ranting and raving on Facebook, but then it can escalate it the next day.
I agree with you. The problem with that is that there are so many people ranting and raving.
That's true.
That it may be hard to decide which ones are actionable and which ones aren't.
But where do you draw the line at who you protect? I mean, if we want to make, you know, 5,000 government officials each one have a protective service detail? Mm-hmm. We're spending billions of dollars, and are we really, you know, then there's the 5,000th and one person
right.
we didn't
Well, and you go to Derek's example of the school board meeting. I have attended from time to time city council meetings in Gaithersburg, Maryland, where I live, and there's a Gaithersburg city cop there, and that's about it. And I can't imagine why somebody would want to cause an incident in an event like that. But I guess the people that were attending that school board meeting that Derek's talking about probably felt the same way. Derek Dortch's story number two on the, or excuse me, story number three on the Federal News Countdown this week is headlined Congressional Security in the Tucson Shooting. And you can read it at federalnewsradio.com/in-depth. Back for story number two from Derek T. Dortch and Josh Soslack when the Federal News Countdown continues on In-Depth with Francis Rose.
Hey, all right, it's the Geico Gecko here, and I've got a special message for all you government employees listening out there. So all you non-government people can go and make yourself a sandwich or whatever. Okay, are they gone? Right, so here's the big news. As a government employee, you could qualify for a federal employee discount on car insurance. And that's on top of Geico's already low rates. In other words, my friend, you could be the or more, and you could save 15% or more. And you'd be in good company, too. On average, federal employees who are Geico customers stay Geico customers for 12 years or more. And that's either because they like geckos or they like saving money. Well, maybe a little of both.
Couldn't have said it better myself. Hey, everyone. This is Mike Causey. If you're a federal employee, then I've got some good news for you. Just call Geico at 1-800-947-AUTO or visit geico.com and see how much you could save.
Hey Eagles fans, tickets to all American University men's and women's basketball home games in Bender Arena are on sale now. Get them online 24/7 at AUEagles.com or by calling the Athletics Ticket Office at 202-885-TIXX. That's 202-885-TIX. Make your plans now to be part of another historic season in Bender Arena.
Catch the Eagles' next home game Wednesday, January 19th against Army at 7:30 p.m.
Video teleconferencing solutions are changing the way people communicate by breaking down walls and enabling face-to-face communication, regardless of distance or environment. Tanberg, now a part of Cisco, developed Break Down the Walls to provide a window into the ways government, education, and healthcare organizations are using VTC solutions to help them operate more effectively and efficiently, and the ways video solutions can be used to address challenges facing public sector organizations today. Learn more at BreakDownTheWalls.com.
I'm Police Officer Sergeant Goodwin. I've been looking into a report of thieves operating in this area. We have now located their hideout, and it's at your local bank. The banks are robbing you blind.
Hi, I'm John Commuta, creator of the Transforming Debt into Wealth system. He's right. If you've got a mortgage, your bank is stealing from you because a typical monthly mortgage payment is 90% or more interest. And over the life of a 30-year mortgage, that can cost you a fortune. It should be illegal. But there's a proven way to eliminate your mortgage and all your other debts using just the money you already make. No credit card debt, no car payment, no mortgage. To prove it, let me send you a copy of my powerful Live Debt-Free CD. Call 1-800-600-1195. Stop getting robbed of your money and future. Get my powerful Live Debt-Free CD. Call 1-800-600-1195. For your free copy of my Live Debt-Free CD, call 1-800-600-1195.
Hey there, I'm Christopher Dorabeck. Here's what we're working on for the Dorabeck Insider this afternoon. The U.S. Naval Academy, you know, it's one of the service academies founded 166 years ago. We'll talk to the provost of the Naval Academy about how teaching has changed in recent years and how cyber is now an integral part of a cadet's education. And innovation, we're going to find out about open innovation, what it is and how to bring it about this afternoon, 3 to 7, on the Dorabeck Insider. It's right here on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM and federalnewsradio.com.
We're back on In Depth with Francis Rose on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. It's the Federal News Countdown every Friday at 2. Experts in the world of the federal government choose the news stories they think are the three most important federal news stories from the week in question. This week, my experts are Josh Soslack of Clio Strategies and Derek Dortch of the Diversa Group. And we are up to
number two.
The second most important federal news story of the week is from Josh Soslack, is from The Economist, and the headline is from the archive, Guns in America, and this is kind of re-upping. Economist pulled this article literally out of their archives and talked about this issue. The archive, of course, here from 1968, and it sounds on reading it that not a lot has changed in the interim time based on what they are observing.
Yeah, it's the reason I pulled this article from July 13th, 1968 kind of violated the rules a little bit, but it was republished this week, so I skated
it
the
counts.
Issue.
It counts. I'll let you slide on this.
It's very relevant.
Is the parallels between 1968 and today and the dialogue about this issue we were talking about in the last segment regarding guns? And, you know, if you think about 1968 in the aftermath of the assassination of Bobby Kennedy and Dr. King, the nation had said, what are we doing about this? And they had these conversations about gun control. They had these conversations about the same things we're talking about today, you know, hate speech and other things. How do we get past that and not keep having that same conversation? There was a fascinating comment in the aftermath of the Fort Hood shooting where somebody was on TV talking about, you know, what do we do about this and isn't this shocking? And he said, you know, it's horrible and it's shocking, but it shouldn't be surprising because this is workplace violence. And every time it happens, we have the same conversation.
Mm-hmm.
So I think we really have to think about what we're saying and have better conversation about it. I don't think that speech caused this tragedy, but I think that we can fix a lot of these things by having better communication. And I think that was really the message the president was trying to get across in Tucson the other day.
How effectively do you think he did that, Derek?
Well, I think the message and I think the speech was tremendous in my own opinion. I mean, I know he got some flack on some people saying it was a pep rally and some people saying, you know, certain kind of things. To me, from what I saw, people needed a balance between, you know, a solemn moment, and then they also needed a balance between someone saying we got hope for the future, and then we're going to do better because of this 9-year-old child who lost her life. We're going to be better people, better leaders, and everything else. So I think it was a great balance. This article that Josh pulled out to me is a tremendous reminder of, you know, like you said, we've been having this same conversation for how many years now, you know, and we could probably even go back further mm-hmm. with this right here, with this same conversation. When do we get to a point where we have all these technology advances and all these great advances in the world, and we're still back to baseline topics about guns and violence and the rhetoric and everything else? You know, to me, you know, this is a point where we probably just need, as all leaders, Republicans and Democrats, Independents, Green Party, Tea Party, we all need to kind of just sit down and kind of say, listen, stop any kind of, you know, no bullseyes, no calling anybody Nazis, no calling anybody socialists. I mean, stop all this kind of false rhetoric, because, I mean, the truth of it is, if you really look at it, we know that's not true. No one's a Nazi here unless you're part of some kind of, you know, complete whatever wing type group. Let's stop all of that, you know, and why can't we? I mean, I don't understand. I think that, you know, the truth of it is, this, it's almost like common sense. Why can't we stop?
Here's why we can't, because people still respond to it. The people who start these conversations, and it's both sides, people gave Sarah Palin a hard time, and I think deservedly so, for her Target thing that got pulled down and excuses made and so on. But at the same time, there's President Obama's reference. If they bring we're talking specifically about Republicans during the presidential campaign, if they bring a knife to the fight, we bring a gun.
Right.
Now,
sure.
It goes both ways. And the reason that both sides make these arguments is because the people that they want to follow them, they, at least they must think that those people will respond to those kinds of images.
It's a battle cry.
Well, and just using that term,
is a little bit insightful, not directed toward you, of course, but that's part of the deal, and that's why it's not going to stop anytime soon. I think this turns into the same conversation that I have in this show all the time about cybersecurity. Your network's going to get compromised. These people are going to continue to use this kind of imagery. So how do you defend against that?
Well, you know, Derek and I were talking about it earlier, and what he said was words matter, and I think that is absolutely true. And words matter. And that's why we're all here talking on the radio, because words matter and they're powerful, and we use powerful words to get across messages. And that's what communication is all about, is getting across your message. So we have to balance. We have to find that balance. You know, when Abe Poland changed the name of the Washington Bullets to the Washington Wizards, he did so because he was trying to make a point, not because by changing the name, less people were going to get shot in the street. But he wanted people to wake up and say, you know, this violence is bad and we have to do something about it. And I'm going to do something symbolic to do that. And I think we can do that with the rhetoric of the speech.
And, you know, Francis, I mean, I think if with the word, with the whole dynamic of words matter, you know, we've had a lot of people who, and even myself, I mean, you know, where people who have said, you know what, I'm not going to run for politics because it's become such a dirty game now. Mm-hmm. Because now, you know, people are being unfair. They put my, you know, family into the street. They bring all these other dynamics that, you know, shouldn't be a part of the political game. You know, I mean, I think if we can get away from the whole a part of using words the wrong way and start saying, you know, words do matter. Mm-hmm. Let's be a better society. Then we can start opening up a lot of different things. I mean, people will say, I want to be more civically engaged. I may want to run for office. But now we're destroying whole segments of the population who even want to get involved.
I would vote for you if you ran for just about anything, man. You've got one.
All right.
You've got one. Josh Soslak, story number two is headlined from the archive, Guns in America. It's from The Economist, and it's posted now at federalnewsradio.com/in-depth. It's the Federal News Countdown, and Derek T. Dorch, whose voice you just heard, has the number two story of the week from GovExec. We'll talk about that when we come back in just a moment on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM.
NBC News Radio, I'm Marlis Majerus. The security is tight as mourners gather at this hour to remember federal judge John Roll. He was one of six people killed when a gunman attacked Arizona Congresswoman Gabrielle Giffords. Meanwhile, doctors continue to give optimistic reports of her recovery, neurosurgeon Michael LaMole.
We're very encouraged that she's continuing to make all the right moves in the right direction.
The high cost of living gets a little higher. Government figures show consumer prices rose 0.5% last month. CNBC's Melissa Francis says consumers end up paying the price one way or another.
Either the price of a box of cereal goes up, or the manufacturer can't pass that cost along, so they just hire fewer workers.
The Pope has approved a miracle attributed to Pope John Paul II, moving him a step closer to being declared a saint by the Catholic Church. Pope Benedict declared that a French nun's recovery from Parkinson's disease was indeed miraculous and due to the intercession of Pope John Paul. I'm Marlis Majerus, NBC News Radio.
I'm all about the three S's: stock up, save money, and simplify.
Member Renee Chevalier on the Sam's Club January stock up event.
I stock up now and save big on the basics we use all the time. Detergent, paper towels.
Health and beauty products too. Save over retail on brands like Tide, Bounty, and Colgate. And sample all the Sam's Club values and benefits January 12th through 25th with no membership required.
Now that's simple.
Not a member? Join at Sam's Club or samsclub.com. Sam's Club, savings made simple.
Your child has a fever, and of course you worry. You're a mom, that's your job. But there's no need to worry about which medicine to choose. Fact. Children's Advil brings your child's fever down faster than Children's Tylenol. And Children's Advil keeps that fever down longer. Nothing's proven better on fever, not even Children's Motrin. For relief you can trust, look for Children's Advil in the cough cold aisle now.
Among OTC pain relievers, brands are trademarks of their respective owners, based on reducing fever below 100 degrees Fahrenheit.
Hi, everybody. It's David and Nikki Nellis for Foodie and the Beast, the D.C. area's one and only food and wine variety show. Tune in next Sunday and every Sunday at 11 right here on 1500 and 820 a.m. to hear the latest from the food and wine scene. We've got celebrity chefs, sommeliers, winemakers, and more all here to tell you about the inside skinny that you won't find anywhere else. That's Foodie and the Beast this Sunday at 11.
A persistent problem facing all government agencies today is disposal of their confidential documents or other sensitive material. The best solution is turning your confidential files into energy. That's right, energy. Get clean and go green with Energy Recovery Operations on Aberdeen Proving Ground in Edgewood, Maryland. Since 1988, Energy Recovery has destroyed all sorts of government confidential records and magnetic media while producing energy. There is complete destruction. Do the green thing. Turn your government confidential records into energy. Go to EnergyRecoveryOnline.com or call 410-679-6200. Your mission is possible. Stop identity theft. Burn your government-sensitive records. Log on to EnergyRecoveryOnline.com or call 410-679-6200. That's EnergyRecoveryOnline.com. This message will self-destruct in 3 seconds. 3, 2, 1.
Profile America, Friday, January 14th. One of the enduring symbols of the nation, along with Uncle Sam, is the majestic American bald eagle. Even though Benjamin Franklin reportedly preferred the wild turkey, the eagle has had a special place in America since its beginning. Once endangered, the bald eagle has made a strong comeback in some areas, and that resurgence is being celebrated for the next 3 weekends at special events in Kansas, Missouri, and Arkansas. The various programs include live lectures, wood carving, and children's activities, and, of course, eagle watching. More than 71 million people watch, photograph, and feed birds and other wildlife across the country each year, both around their homes and in natural settings. You can find these and more facts about America from the U.S. Census Bureau online at census.gov.
Join AGA for its National Leadership Conference, February 17th and 18th at the Ronald Reagan Building and International Trade Center. AGA will bring together government, financial, management, and accountability leaders to share valuable insight, proven strategies, lessons learned. Sessions over current issues relating to the American Recovery and Reinvestment Act, the effects of political transitions, and what the future holds. Show your commitment to a more accountable future. Register today at agacgfm.org/NLC.
We're back on In Depth with Francis Rose on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. It's the Federal News Countdown. This week, my experts choosing the three most important federal news stories of the week, according to them, are Derek T. Dortch of the Diversa Group and Josh Soslack of Clio Strategies, and also a senior fellow at the Telework Exchange. And Derek Dortch, your story number two is headlined, EEOC reports record rise in bias complaints and progress in trimming backlog. This is a story from GovExec. And do you think it's the economy that's putting some pressure on the EEOC that's causing them to get that many more complaints?
I think so. I mean, I think what we were talking about over the break, all of us were talking, you know, I do think the economy has something to do with it. People are getting laid off. People are getting fired. There's a whole bunch of trim backs on a lot of different, you know, private sector companies. And so during this kind of time, as we were saying, where, you know, the economy is good, somebody just gets another job and they don't want to necessarily file a claim because I don't want to get blacklisted. Mm-hmm. You know, I don't want to have my name out there. So I'm just going to move on and I can find another job pretty easily. Now where the economy's hard and you kind of really do feel like, hey, listen, I need to take some action on this and, you know, they're laying me off. What kind of recourse do I have? Then I do think that this is, you know, part of the process.
Mm-hmm.
This was kind of one of those good and bad stories for me in terms of I'm glad the EEOC is on top of it. They're trimming the backlog and we have to kind of look into that a little bit more. But it does seem like they've got a full complement. They're trying to hire more people and cut this backlog down. But then also this rising. I mean, what is that? I mean, are these true complaints? Are we really are seeing a lot more discrimination based on religion and race? Or are we seeing people just filing because they felt as if they were, you know, cheated out of their job or something like that? You know, I don't know. I mean, I think we've got to look into the figures a little bit more.
The story here talks about the private sector job discrimination complaints. So I want to make sure we don't have the implication that somehow these are going through the roof in the federal
right,
government.
Exactly.
But the EEOC is responsible for doing this. Do you think there is a similar kind of thing happening in the federal sector, or is it a little different?
You know, my guess is it's a little different in the federal sector for a couple of reasons. One is, I think in the federal sector, you haven't seen the job layoffs. And as Derek mentioned when we were talking, you know, if we get some changes in how many people are working for the federal government, some reductions in force, then we may see this same phenomena happen. You know, if you're not covered under a collective bargaining agreement, whether you're in the government or the private sector, you have little recourse And if you can't find another job, it's certainly out there. The risk of being labeled as someone who's filed a complaint is certainly higher when you're actually think you're going to get another job. But if you've been unemployed for, you know, 12, 18, 24 months, you know, you're trying to feed your family, you're going to do whatever you can do to try. I would be very interested to see the statistics on the resolution of these complaints and what happens. And then maybe look back at the government during a time of layoff and see if there was a similar trend.
That's an interesting corollary to draw. I've always kind of been in the school of thought that you're talking about, Derek, which is if they don't want me, if they're creating an environment where I'm not wanted, not me personally, but people in general.
Because we will always want you first.
Well, thank you. That's very nice of you to say. Then if you're not wanted, why would you want to stick around?
Right.
Why?
Exactly.
We saw the case this week of Teresa Chambers, who's going to be reinstalled at the Park Police. And I'm happy that she has gotten back the job that she wants to have gotten back. I'm happy for her that she's achieved her goal. But they made it very clear that they didn't want her. And so I'm curious. And she talked to the Federal Drive about this very issue this week, federalnewsradio.com/Federal Drive. But that was my first question, is if they don't want you that badly that they'll pursue litigation to keep you away.
Why come back?
Why would you want to go back there?
Well, you know, I think in this kind of time in which we really are short of jobs. I mean, even with her kind of position, if she doesn't try to fight to come back, where does she go? You know, she's blacklisted in terms of being a chief of police somewhere else.
Well, she actually had another job.
Yeah.
She was working in, I guess, Montgomery County?
Prince George's County. She was police chief in a small town.
But you know, I mean, it's kind of a different scenario of kind of being a small town police chief and then being, you know, in charge of a federal agency, of that dynamic. So I mean, I do think at a certain level you're going to be, you know, blacklisted. And I agree with you. In this economy, though, I've seen a number of people who will stay at jobs who just say, "I hate what I do, but I can't afford. I'm not getting any bites anywhere else. I can't afford to go anywhere else." I mean, you're held there.
You know, there was the great fear that all of the senior federal workers were all going to retire, and then it didn't happen.
Right.
And, you know, the economy had a huge impact on that, and people were like, well, you know, I can't afford to retire. But I think when you come back in a situation like hers, it's got to be hard because, you know, you're coming back with a little asterisk and, you know, people are going to actually say, oh, well, you know, she was right, or did she just win the, you know, she have a better lawyer?
Right.
That's got to be hard. So I'm not sure, even if I got to come back, whether I would or not. There was the other case where the woman got fired from USDA.
USDA? Mm-hmm.
Yeah, where, you know,
unjustifiably.
Yeah. And they offered her the job back, even a better job, and she said, yeah, that's right. Okay.
Yeah, that was a very interesting case. And I guess if you wanted to, you could try to make the case that that was discrimination because she was being discriminated against for her words, for what she said on the job. Interesting stuff. The story is called EEOC Reports Record Rise in Bias Complaints and Progress in Trimming Backlog. It's Derek Dorch's story number 2 on the Federal News Countdown this week on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. Story number 1 from Derek Dorch and Josh Soslack, my guests on the Federal News Countdown, when In Depth with Francis Rose continues.
Nothing is more certain than death and taxes. You've heard that expression. But there's something else you can count on. Realizing your personal dreams of wealth and freedom. Listen to Wayne Zell every Saturday at 10 a.m. for Blueprint for Wealth. Wayne will explain how the more you know about taxes, estate planning, and business planning, the better prepared you will be for your journey to wealth and freedom. Listen to Blueprint for Wealth every Saturday at 10 a.m. here on 1500 a.m. Federal News Radio. Because you can count on more than death and taxes.
If you only want to lose 5 or 10 vanity pounds, sorry, but we can't help you. But if you seriously want to lose 30 pounds or more because you're worried about health risks like diabetes, high blood pressure, or cholesterol, we can help you, and the trial is free when you call 1-800-600-7477 in the next 5 minutes. We're Sensa, and our revolutionary weight loss solution is clinically proven to help you lose 30 pounds or more. And now, for a limited time, you can try Sensa free for a full 30 days if you call the
toll-free number in the next 5 minutes. Senza is proven through science, but works like magic. In one of the largest weight loss studies of its kind ever conducted, more than 1,400 participants lost over 30 pounds on average with Senza, without changing their diet or exercise routine. If you're serious about losing weight and have more than 30 pounds to lose, call now for your free trial. Call 1-800-600-7477. 1-800-600-7477. That's 1-800-600-7477.
Newsmakers on the Dora Beck Insider.
Tom Trabucco, Director of External Affairs at the Federal Retirement Thrift Investment Board.
Somebody noticed a change in their account balance that didn't reflect contributions or earnings. So what we did is activated our core at the call centers to give them information for any of these folks to tell them of our plan to get this right. We'll notify all affected participants, offer to take the funds back, reverse the transaction, and make them whole.
Hear the entire interview online. FederalNewsRadio.com/DoraBeckInsider.
Thanks for listening to In Depth with Francis Rose on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. Every week, two experts in the world of the federal government choose the news stories they think are the three most important to people who work for the federal government. They rank them in order from number three to number one, and then count them down with me every Friday at 2 on the Federal News Countdown on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. My experts this week are Josh Soslack of Clio Strategies and Derek T. Dorch of the Diversa Group, and we're up to...
Number one!
The most important federal news story of the week, according to Derek T. Dorch, is headlined CBP to hire 1,000 IT workers during fiscal 2011. And the subhead, Federalizing Workforce, part of IT Transformation Program. This is, to put it quite simply, this is insourcing at it, exactly. At its most obvious.
That's right.
We'll see a lot more of these throughout 2011, don't you think?
I think so. I mean, we've heard this from Secretary Gates within DOD. Mm-hmm. We've heard this out of Homeland Security. We've heard this from a number of different agencies, whether it be acquisition or IT workforce, about, you know, insourcing and kind of getting rid of the whole kind of contract community. So I think we're going to see this. I mean, to me, this is exciting news, mm-hmm. so to say. I mean, he did say something interesting. He said that hiring a government employee can save us up to $40,000 per year, you know, in the contracting with similar tasks. Now, I mean, I think maybe people in the contracting community may argue that, mm-hmm. you know, I mean, and so this is a big debate as we, you know, are going forward, where we're kind of saying, listen, we got to get this deficit down. A lot of people are looking to, how do we save money? We got these bills out there to say cut the federal workforce, but then other people are saying, well, cut the contract, you know, workforce. I mean, so who's right on this? I mean, yeah. You know, who's actually the one good thing of hope is that they are going to be bringing some people in terms of 1,000 IT workers who will be actual feds.
Mm-hmm.
That is all, to me, that is always good news, but we're going to always have to have contractors and always have to have federal, you know, people in mm-hmm. there.
Well, let me put a huge positive spin on this thing, and then talk about some things that may not be as good as they think they are. The huge positive spin is that what they're talking about doing is hiring young feds,
mm-hmm.
Kind of low grade federal workers. And there is no better time to hire young people than in a down economy,
mm-hmm.
because you get the cream of the crop. These people, there are people out there with Ivy League educations who are looking for any job they can get, and we can get them into the federal government. Now, this happened about, I don't know, 7-10 years ago. Economy went down. Nobody's getting a job on Wall Street, and lots of real smart young people took federal jobs. Because it's a good job.
Mm-hmm.
They, you know, the spirit of service.
It's stable.
And, you know, a number of organizations, Partnership for Public Service and other folks are out there really promoting this, because it's a great thing to get these young people into the federal government. And, you know, we've got a lot of folks at the 14 and 15 level in D.C. who've been doing this a long time. You know, when they retire, let's replace them with young, aggressive, eager folks. That will actually save money. Because we're going to pay less for really good people. We have to train them. We have to, you know, there's a lot of stuff they got to learn. But it is really positive to get that young, fresh blood into the government. And let's do that.
Mm-hmm.
On the, are we really going to save money doing this? You know, it's too early to tell. The problem that government has a lot of the times is it's not used to doing stuff. It's used to buying things.
Mm-hmm.
And they know how to manage projects and hire consultants to do stuff. But we've lost the ability in government through a lot of the outsourcing to actually do things. And so we need to be able to have people who can train these people, who can get them to change the culture of government to one where we actually do stuff instead of just buy it.
Mm-hmm. The counter argument to the it's cheaper to hire them argument is sure. You're paying them regardless of whether or not the government wants to continue doing that function
right.
20 years from now. And it's some. How long is it till somebody vests before you can start to collect your pension?
I mean, once you're off your probationary period, maybe 1 or 2 years. I mean,
you're eligible yeah. for a pension really quick, and you're paying, or I'm paying it, or we are both paying it. You're all paying it as taxpayers. Forever until that person's no longer with us, and in some cases beyond that.
I think that was a bigger issue with CSRS than it is with FERS, because there's a lot. It's not the big defined benefit plan that mm-hmm. it once was, and I think that changed. And you know, there's still some defined benefit plans out there, but not in the federal space.
Now, mm-hmm. the one thing that I do like about this article is that it really does, for the job seeker, it really does define where the priorities are. And you know, as you look at, we kind of say new technologies in terms of cloud computing, you know, transformation, kind of modernization. Kind of removing and getting away from the legacy systems and kind of moving into new kind of systems. For a person who is an IT or maybe a college student or somebody who's kind of saying, listen, you know, where is the federal government going in terms of IT priorities? You know, you need to kind of read this kind of things and kind of listen to what we're talking about, because that's where you need to start putting your energy at, you know, in order to make sure you're going to be one of the top people who is competitive in order to get these jobs, you know, when CPB and other agencies do hire.
I will say what I take away from this piece is not so much specifically about the workforce or the advantages or disadvantages of insourcing or whatever. It is the concept that I think if you went around and asked the average citizen, they wouldn't believe that agencies get, but I take away from this piece that agencies do get it, and that is the way that we've been doing things can't continue just because of money. Right. Whether we decide we like it or not is not the issue. Whether we think it's a good idea to provide X is not the idea anymore. It's we have this much money. How do we prioritize what we want to get done, and how do we mitigate the problems that might be caused by us not being able to do what we just can't afford to do anymore? That's right. I go to the very end of this piece, the very last statement from Ken Richhart, the Deputy Assistant Commissioner of CBP's Office of Information Technology. It's very hard to get things turned off, Richhart said. However, keeping legacy systems running indefinitely is not the solution, he added. We cannot afford it. Right. Pretty simple. Right. And there was a long time. You can ask people inside and outside government where you wouldn't have heard that necessarily from a government thought leader like him, where the person might not have said we can't afford it because that wasn't necessarily the mindset.
I think with the dynamics of everybody have to be fiscal responsible now, mm-hmm. and agency leaders are being put, you know, really, you know, in a dynamic of saying, listen, where can you save these dollars at? This is important.
It's not that easy to turn off contracts either.
Yeah, well, it's a fair point. Josh Soslak making that point. And Derek T. Dorch's story number one on the Federal News Countdown this week is from Federal Computer Week. The headline is CBP to hire 1,000 IT workers during fiscal 2011. That means we have the number one story of the week from Josh Soslak. We'll cover that when In Depth with Francis Rose continues. It's the Federal News Countdown.
FedCloud blog on federalnewsradio.com takes a look at the issues surrounding cloud computing through the eyes of those who are using it every day. We'll share with you the challenges, opportunities, and lessons learned from some of the top minds in the world of federal IT. Collaborate with others and help shape the discussion on cloud computing at the FedCloud blog on federalnewsradio.com or follow the FedCloud blog on Twitter. The FedCloud blog is sponsored by Cisco and Intel.
A persistent problem facing all government agencies today is disposal of their confidential documents or other sensitive material. The best solution is turning your confidential files into energy. That's right, energy. Get clean and go green with Energy Recovery Operations on Aberdeen Proving Ground in Edgewood, Maryland. Since 1988, Energy Recovery has destroyed all sorts of government confidential records and magnetic media while producing energy. There is complete destruction. Do the green thing. Turn your government confidential records into energy. go to EnergyRecoveryOnline.com or call 410-679-6200. Your mission is possible. Stop identity theft. Burn your government-sensitive records. Log on to EnergyRecoveryOnline.com or call 410-679-6200. That's EnergyRecoveryOnline.com. This message will self-destruct in 3 seconds. 3, 2, 1.
Tune in Sunday morning from 9 to 10 a.m. for Executive Leaders Radio. This show features four of the D.C. region's finest business leaders. Through each of these compelling interviews, these high-achieving leaders become relatable role models who share how they were able to build their enterprise, their personal secrets of success, and opportunities that lie ahead. The show inspires, entertains, and is full of wisdom unheard elsewhere. Tune in Sundays at 9 a.m. for Executive Leaders Radio.
Don't be surprised by the latest changes to your commute. Get traffic and weather together.
We're back on In Depth with Francis Rose on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. It's the Federal News Countdown. And my experts choosing the three most important federal news stories of the week, according to them, are Derek T. Dortch of the Diversa Group and Josh Soslack of Clio Strategies. You have 10 seconds to explain Clio Strategies.
Clio is the one of the muses, one of the daughters of Zeus, and she's the smart one.
Now, what you do at Clio Strategies?
I thought you wanted to know why we called it Clio.
No, I can look that up on the internet.
Yeah, but that's the more interesting part. Clio Strategies is a real small consulting firm. We look at issues like strategic marketing to government, continuity, telework policy, and other issues like that.
Excellent. More about it linked up on federalnewsradio.com/in-depth, so you can figure out what that's all about. And maybe I'll even put a link up to the explanation of Clio, as you were about to tell us.
Exactly.
That's the interesting part.
Well, we'll talk about that afterwards.
Right.
Your story number one on the Federal News Countdown, I think, is more interesting than even mythology. The headline is, Brown asks for deep cuts and five-year extension of taxes. This is from the Sacramento Bee, and that's the Brown in the headline is California Governor Jerry Brown. Now, the saying is that the states are the crucibles of democracy where things are tried out and then brought to the federal level. If that's the case here, according to what's in this story, there's a whole lot of people that work for the federal government that are going to be very, very, very unhappy.
Yeah, and that's why it's my number one story. That and the fact that the story on telework that somebody's writing and quoting me hasn't published yet, so I couldn't get that one in. But no, I really think, you know, as California goes, the rest of the nation follows, and, you know, we're going to learn something from this. Jerry Brown came in as governor, and he was faced with some very serious fiscal issues. He addressed them by saying, we're going to get serious about them and we're going to start cutting stuff.
Mm-hmm.
We're going to cut state worker pay. Okay. Cut pay. Not hire more people, not lay some people off, cut pay.
Mm-hmm.
That's very serious. It's being taken very seriously in California. And this is a Democratic governor who everybody said, oh, he's tied to the workers' unions. He's tied to the, you know. No, Jerry Brown came in and said, this is serious. We got to deal with it.
Mm-hmm.
We've got problems in our government. We've got issues with the deficit. We're going to need to address them. I don't know that this is foreshadowing for the federal government, but it is certainly something to watch.
Mm-hmm.
And what's interesting is when you start looking at the $12 billion in cuts, most of that's actually new taxes. Of course, they call it revenue enhancement.
Mm-hmm.
I think you remember that from a while ago,
sure.
Too.
Yeah.
But there are some symbolic cuts that I think are going to resonate with the people of California, and then they're all going to have to tighten the belt and swallow a little bit.
I think politicians have recognized the idea that if you're going to raise taxes, you have to put out some of these things to give people the idea that it's a shared sacrifice. Whether it turns out to be a mirage or not, I guess, is left to an analysis that's well beyond my pay grade. But
I want to take issue with one thing in there, and this is the cutting of the cell phones. And I think it's a symbolic thing. I think I know why he did it.
Yeah.
So they're going to cut 96,000 cell phones from some state workers. The problem with that is that since, at least at the federal level, we've seen some research that 90% of feds actually work out of the office part of the time. And this is not telework. This is actually just working from somewhere other than the office. And about half of the feds may telework at some point. You're actually going to impact productivity. And so you've got a lot of state workers saying, I'm getting a pay cut. They're taking my cell phone away. Yeah, good luck if something happens in the middle of the night.
Yep, I'll be a 9-to-5-er, and that'll be the end of that. Now, Derek, this the press release from Governor Brown said he wants to save $308 million for a 10% reduction in take-home pay for state employees not currently covered under collective bargaining agreements. Right. Now, if you're not in a union, you get the pay cut. If you're in a union, you're protected. But at some point in time, do you think there becomes a critical mass of either citizenry or the non-union workers in the government who got the cut who say, listen, this isn't fair. I'm willing to take it because I know what we're up against, but you got to put some pressure, Governor Brown, on the union to go along with this at some level, whether it's at the level that we're at or not.
Well, you know, I think we're at such a serious time that this has to be a conversation amongst all government employees. I mean, and state, and I think California is the experiment right now to kind of see.
Yeah.
And I think all government employees in California need to say, hey, listen, we're at such a critical mass right now that rather than us losing our jobs, I'd rather take this pay cut. I'd rather go, you know, and do some things differently, okay, in order to save the state, save what we're doing, and then we all work together on this, you know. And I mean, we've got to kind of, you know, stop being selfish. I understand that we're at a certain point of, you know, we're living in terms of our salary and everything else. But I do think all, you know, unions and non-union employees are going to have a serious conversation and, you know, really kind of just say, hey, listen, I'm willing to take a 5% cut if it can save us $1.2 billion or whatever the case is.
My fear is that the model that was established in the car bailout may be the model that's pursued here. The unions didn't want to make a whole lot of concessions there. They wound up making some, not what some people asked them to do. And instead of allowing the car companies to crash, the two that were in trouble, Chrysler and GM, they were bailed out by the federal government. Well, if they're too big to fail, certainly the state of California is too big to fail. Sure. And my fear is that the unions would be well justified to say, well, you bailed out the car companies. You can't bail out the biggest state economy-wise in the United States.
But, you know, I think we've got to get to a point where we have to realize that the federal government, even though we bailed it out, we just don't have any money. We don't have any. I mean, we're borrowing against everything. You know, everything is kind of like, you know, robbing Peter to pay Paul. And we just don't have the money to keep on doing this. And, you know, at a certain point, you got to cut the faucet off and say, we don't have it. And go from there.
Yeah, the conversation is not just in California. I don't know if you saw it today, but Congressman Mike Kaufman from Colorado has come out and say, I want all the feds to take a 2-week furlough and not get paid. And this is serious. There are conversations. Now, I don't know that this has legs, but certainly that conversation is starting. We got to be serious about it. You know, if you look at what happened with the car companies, that's one model. Look at the airlines. The airlines actually did all go into bankruptcy, I think, except one, who actually had a pretty good labor contract. And they changed their labor contracts. Not great for the employees, but most of them are back and a little more healthy.
Right. We do have good models like Southwest. I mean, we do have good models of industry out there where people are making money and employees are still, you know, doing pretty good.
We could continue this.